Hi, and welcome to Tell Me About IT with Jeffrey Snover. I'm Lindsay Berg. I'm a senior product marketing manager with Microsoft working on Windows Server. And I'm super excited to have Jeffrey join us for the beginning of this series, talking more about where we're going with Windows Server and what we're thinking about as we move forward with the next wave of the product. Jeffrey, great to have you here.
It's great to be had.
I'm super excited, as I say, to talk about what we're doing with the product and what you've been thinking as you develop it. Because obviously this has been in the works for a while, long before we started going public with any news about Windows Server 2016. This had to be in your head. So what was top of mind for you when you started thinking about the next version?
Yeah, so indeed, that's the job of the architect, to look out there and see where we need to be and then lay a roadmap to get there. And so really, all roads lead to the cloud, right? We want to be able to take advantage of those great cloud characteristics, right? If you take a look at the industry right now, every single layer of the industry has dramatic change, dramatic rethinking, from the silicon to the chip layout to the board layout to the system layout, rack scale architectures, you know, new storage architectures, new networking architectures, new operational architectures with things like DevOps. So there's just an incredible amount of change. So the question is, well, how do people adopt that change, right? Do you just like, you know, do the turtle thing, right? Hide and say, man, I hope that all goes away or sorts itself out.
Right.
You know, bad strategy, by the way, bad strategy. Or do you, you know, how do you keep up? Because the thing is that as IT, you know, IT is about keeping things running, right? Not chasing the latest thing here or there.
Right.
So how do you mediate those two worlds? And the belief was that by adopting cloud technologies, a cloud mindset, what it did was it mitigated these two factors. It allowed IT to deliver a set of services in a consistent, normative way without any drama.
Right.
And then to allow people, applications, services, et cetera, to be very agile on top of that.
Right.
And iterate at a much faster pace, whereas IT is, more steady, more less drama.
Sure, absolutely. And so, what kinds of things are we putting then into the operating system to mitigate that drama? Because I think that that's a really good way of thinking about it. That's the role of our operating system, is to keep the lights on
and eliminate the drama.
Exactly.
I hate drama. So, so it's basically software-defined everything.
Right.
Okay. So part of this is, you know, where does the drama come from, right? And the answer is, well, when I have a particular piece of software on a particular piece of hardware, like, yay, meets my needs, or used to meet my needs, but now it doesn't. Well, now what do I do? Well, get a bigger server, and then how do I get from here to there? Oh, and then I want to keep things running, and blah, blah, blah. Well, software defined everything, software defined compute, software defined data, software defined networking, allows this layer of indirection, this virtualization that gives IT the ability to take these raw resources, pool them into virtual resources, and take some of that drama away, right? So you're running on a machine, it's not big enough. Oh, well, make it bigger.
Right.
Or, hey, move it to another environment.
Which is interesting, because I think there's a perception that software-defined data center is more sophisticated, or almost a harder way of thinking about the data center.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that the goal ultimately is to make things simpler, to make it easier to do what you need to do.
Yeah, I don't know why people talk about it that way. I think what happens is the engineers, the geeks, just love talking about, oh, let me tell you about blah, 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 and people like, and instead it's like, let me tell you about the stuff you don't need to hear anything about, right? Like I used to, you know, work in file systems and stuff, and it was great. You know, you had the days of FTP, and somebody would add, well, look, every time you transfer a block, I do a hash so you can see things. And then at some point somebody developed NFS, and you demo NFS, and what was there to demo? And the answer was, well, it just worked. There was nothing to demo. That's the point.
Right.
That is the point. That's where we want to get to, where things, there is no drama. There's no big blah. You know, if you're a geek, we'll give you some geek stuff.
Sure.
But as an IT operator, you want things to just work.
Right. And I guess the question then is, does that limit what you can run on top of it? So if you're doing all this work to stabilize the platform and standardize the platform, does that limit you as you move forward with workloads?
Yeah, you know, the reality is, in the past, that was true. In the past, you know, first versions of virtualization had limitations. Those limitations went away multiple releases ago. You know, when we all of a sudden, we, you know, just burst through all the limits. You could have incredibly large memory spaces, you know, NUMA-based virtual machines. Good heavens, anything you could want to do. But then we found, well, okay, that's great, but when I really want to transfer something is as long as it's in the same subnet, everything works. But what happens if I want to move it to a different subnet? Or I want to fail it over to the cloud? Well, that's when you need things like software-defined networking to make that simple. But again, the goal is not software-defined networking, blah, blah, blah. The goal is, hey, you want to do something without any drama. You want it here and you want it over there. Not, well, you can move it anywhere you want as long as it's in the same subnet. What's that?
Sure. So you want to eliminate the limitations.
Well, that's Microsoft's core.
Yeah.
You know, our core has always been about taking these very high-end, hard-to-do things and making them run on value-based hardware and make them available to the world. That's our DNA. That's what we do really, really well.
So if I'm somebody running, say, Windows Server 2008 today, and I haven't necessarily taken a look at the platform in a while, where would you start? I mean, there's a lot of features in the new version of the operating system. What's the right starting point to start to understand what we're delivering?
Yeah, clearly what you want to do is you want to pick up the latest, the next technical preview of the operating system, download that, kick the tires, listen to our technical talks. We're going to have a series. Listen to our series.
Yeah.
But, you know, kick the tires. And I will say, you know, as I mentioned, the number of things that are changing so much, what I find as I go talk to conferences and talk to customers is that the people who are able to harvest these things, or harness these things to be able to take advantage of them, the advantages they are getting out of them are so dramatic that they're really driving their business forward. They're able to differentiate themselves from both from their competitors and their colleagues who aren't adopting these new technologies and approaches, and they're being rewarded. Their businesses are doing much better. They're the folks getting the promotions and the bonuses, et cetera. Indeed, you know, it has never been more important for IT pros to invest in their career. There's so much change. And of course, we're a great trusted partner to help you through those transitions. But really, I got to encourage everyone, now's the time to invest in your career. Don't do the turtle thing. Don't do the thing that said, oh, you know, I learned all that stuff a while ago. Now I'm just going to kind of coast. And now's the time to invest in your career.
Because it's actually exciting, I think, what's out there. And I think the opportunities are there.
And indeed, it's not, you shouldn't view that as a burden. You should, and people who have stopped, you know, stop, take some time, invest, come back. And the one word that just keeps coming up over and over again is fun.
Right.
Boy, this is fun. I mean, just the looks on their face, like, oh, whether it's PowerShell, of course, that's about as fun as you can get.
Sure.
Or some of these software-defined networking things and software-defined storage is like, oh my God, look what I can do, look what I can do.
Right.
And it's just fun. It's really fun.
So as we move forward with the series, we're going to talk about storage eventually. Yep. We're going to talk about networking, clearly. The other thing that we haven't, and compute, I think the thing that we haven't really addressed, though, is this idea of Windows Server as your application platform.
Yeah.
So do we have advances in the next version of the server that are going to change the way you think about applications?
Hello, McFly. Yes, of course.
I know. I had to ask the question. It was
of course, the tee up. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I'd say that this next release is the most dramatic release ever in that regard. Now, by the way, with that, you shouldn't, again, feel fear. You know, I once saw, did I tell you about the story about the latest Aerosmith album came out a number of years ago, and this review said...
They have more albums.
Oh, it was a while ago.
No, I get that.
But they said, oh, it was exactly what you want.
Right.
It was an instant classic because it was familiar and yet new at the same time.
Right.
That's what Windows Server 2016 is. It's familiar. It's the Windows you know. It's the Windows you're comfortable with. It's the Windows that you're basing your livelihood on. It's Windows. But it's new. We have NanoServer. NanoServer is a dramatic refactoring of the server. So if you don't need the GUI, and most people outside of small and medium businesses don't need the GUI, if you're doing scale-out applications, now all of a sudden it's 20 times smaller.
That's amazing.
20 times smaller. You should see the boot times, man. Boom, just boots like that.
Well, and the servicing must go way down too.
The servicing goes down, the security footprint goes down. It's just a wonderful environment. So you take that, and then you take containers. Now here we're thinking chocolate, peanut butter. Put them together. it's wonderful. So containers are lightweight application environments. Mm-hmm. So the way this is going to work is, as a developer, your developers will get there, bring up Visual Studio, and they'll say, I'd like to target, you know, my traditional server environment. You get all the APIs. Or you'll say, I'd like to target the nano server environment. You'll then be told what APIs are there. You'll have IntelliSense. It'll only show you the APIs that are available. By the way, all the APIs you think are available. The ones that aren't available are things like, draw me a dialog box, those sort of APIs, right? Cortana. Cortana APIs, they're not going to be a nano server.
Fair enough.
Big disappointment. But so you'll do that, and then you produce the XE. And then with that XE, you'll be able to run it on nano server running on a physical machine.
Sure.
In a virtual machine.
Right.
Or in a guest, or in a container.
Right.
And we have two types of containers.
Right.
We'll talk
more about Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers as we move forward. We've got a lot of content out there, because that's obviously been a really popular topic.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that it all fits together.
It all fits together in a nice, simple way. Again, it's what you're familiar with some new things, right? So you hear about containers, sounds like, oh, what is that? You know what? It's a very simple thing. You take your XE, you run it in a container. Oh, was that like running in a VM? Yeah, it's like running in a VM.
It's a lot like running in a VM.
The mechanisms are different. It isn't a VM. It's different. It has a lot of different characteristics, but it's just like that. So
great.
Yeah.
Well, I think that
drama.
No drama. And that's really the crucial thing, is that because I know that upgrade can feel like a lot to our customers.
Right.
Because those are huge environments, and they're running businesses on them, and they rely on them. And the idea of making changes within those environments, I think, can seem a little bit daunting sometimes.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that the changes that you're suggesting and that you've been thinking through with this next version, that they're going to be advantages that outweigh the difficulty of moving from one operating system to another.
You've got it exactly. And by the way, we're making big investments to make that upgrading easier and easier. So for instance, rolling cluster update.
Right.
We got to do a whole thing on rolling cluster
updates.
On rolling
cluster updates.
Yeah.
Well, and you're a technical fellow now. That's a great place to close. What does it mean to be a technical fellow?
Well, it means that I'm never going to be promoted again in my life. Because technical feller is the top of our technical ladder for individual technical contributors. So I don't know if you know this. We have 23 technical fellows.
No.
Yeah. So we have over 100,000 employees.
Yeah.
We have 23 technical fellows. Of that, I think about 11 are individual technical contributors.
Right.
Which I am.
Sure.
Others have like 700 people
Absolutely.
Working for them. They're really kind of vice presidents, but we give
right.
them that title. Anyway, so of the 11, like three of them are Turing Award winners.
Wow.
Get this. Microsoft has had 5 Turing Award winners. Only 3 of them have been technical fellows.
That's extraordinary. But that's great.
So anyway, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I think it shows, you know, how much focus and emphasis there still is in our on-premises business and what we're bringing to customers in the data center. I mean, this is this is your whole focus, is how we think about our customers' data centers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, the people get that confused. We talk a lot about the cloud. And a lot of customers say, hey, Jeffrey, would you knock it off at the cloud? I'm on-premise. I'm going to stay on-premise. And you just talk to me all about the cloud again. Look, here's the thing you got to understand. The vast majority of the things we're doing, not all, mm-hmm. but the vast majority of the things we're doing to be a great in the cloud are going to benefit you if you don't go to the cloud. Honestly, they are. We talk a lot about these high-level features, but the things that honestly excite me the most are not the things I get to talk about in videos, right? It's the reliability, the diagnostics, the fact that stuff just works and is reliable. And if that disk drive, the hardware gets a little wonky, instead of that generating an area, now we've got these finite state machines that check this and then do that and then auto-recover. And guess what? We did that all for the cloud, but as an enterprise, you're going to benefit from that as well. So when you hear cloud here, they're doing that for the cloud, but it's also going to help me if I don't go to the cloud.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, and I think we're going to close. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, and we'll look forward to doing this again soon.
Great.